The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
When you turn on the evening news, do you see what you want to see or what you need to see? Welcome to Bread for the Journey, ordinary people doing extraordinary deeds with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. It seems like more often than not, the good news and people that are making it are buried into a two-minute feature piece near the end of the report. What about giving these people and this kind of news a full hour every week? Now, here's your host, Mariana Cacciatore.
This is Mariana Cacciatore, and today we have with us Aaron Cruel and Tiffany Jacobs. Aaron's a creative and extraordinary educator, the kind of teacher everyone wishes they had. Her teaching experiences in room 203 at Wilson High School were made into a movie called The Freedom Riders. Aaron's character was played by two-time Oscar winner Hilary Swank. And later in the hour, we'll be interviewing one of the original students in Aaron's classroom, Tiffany Jacobs. Before I actually bring her in, I will say this show is called Ordinary People, Extraordinary Deeds. And we, at Bread for the Journey, decided, we're a nonprofit that's 25 years old. And what we do is find people in cities all around the country who recognize that giving back is part of a life well lived, and they call us, and we empower them and a small group of people they pull together to open a small nonprofit. We give them 501c3 status and lots of tools so that they can begin to raise a little bit of money in their community and then give it away in that very same community to a whole range of people who are doing things that make the community more healthy or just or beautiful, alive. We give in the areas of arts and education and children and youth and elder care and environment. We work with homeless. It's a really beautiful program that almost has no limitations to it. And we give really freely with no strings attached. We don't even allow written grant proposals. Our grants are micro grants, anywhere between $250 and $3,000. And I became, what I do when I created the show is that I interview people to whom we've given grants, because in our work we get to meet some of the most extraordinary people, and we created a radio show because we wanted to share those people with you. And so our chapter in Orange County, California gave a grant to the Freedom Riders Foundation, and this is how I got to interview one of my very favorite people in the world that I became introduced to through a movie, the movie The Freedom Riders. So we're going to begin here in a few minutes with Aaron Cruel, the primary, the star of the movie. And after the film, Aaron decided to channel her classroom experiences toward a broader cause. And today her impact as a teacher extends well beyond Room 203. Erin founded the Freedom Riders Foundation, where she currently teaches teachers around the country how to implement her innovative lesson plans into their own classrooms. So welcome, Erin. I'm a big fan of yours and so proud to have you and Tiffany on the show today.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm already feeling a little misty-eyed just listening to your description of what you do and paying it forward. And to have been a nonprofit that was the beneficiary of your folks was just such an honor. We had the opportunity last year to work with your colleagues who did microfinance, a loan for an incredible young person, the first in their family to graduate, first in their family to go to college, to have that opportunity. And it was an emotional event. They came and spent the entire afternoon with the Freedom Riders and these incredible high school seniors who are graduating. And so we are very connected with the fabric and beliefs of what you do, because we get to see the magic firsthand.
Oh, that's so great. I love that. It just, it makes everybody's life richer when we all move into that space of, I call it generosity of spirit, when we move into
Absolutely.
That place. And you so naturally have that, as was shown in the film. You know, I want to ask a few questions first about the film, and so let me begin with this one. You know, as I was watching the film, it seemed like the greater challenge in your classroom was the administration. Not to minimize the challenges with the kids. I know that there were challenges there, and we'll talk more about that. But I wondered if that was an accurate representation of how it really was for you.
You know, that's a great question. I think there were so many elements that we wanted to portray in the film, because I think our belief really is the greatest way to equalize a very unfair playing field is through education. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, not just giving a kid a fish, but teaching him how to fish and doing that metaphorically through education. So I think I went into the teaching field thinking that everyone was altruistic and everyone wanted to do something for the greater good. And I just assumed that education was based on meritocracy. That's what I believed and wanted to believe and still hope for. I think when I actually walked into the teacher's lounge and heard some of that negative banter and some of those stereotypes, I wasn't prepared for that to come from my brethren. I thought, you know, teaching is a calling, and it's bigger than all of us, because we're all underpaid and we're all overworked and we're all in this together. Right. And I think that was really a difficult, you know, kind of rude awakening, is that some of those educators didn't feel the same way about all kids. And Long Beach, California at the time had been a city that was truly in transition. We had the Los Angeles riots. There was over 126 murders in the community in 1 year. Wow. And there was a lot of economic change. The Navy at one point, which had a very illustrious career dating all the way back to World War II, had pulled out. So the city was going through a transition. And mm-hmm. with that transition came a lot of change, and people weren't prepared for the change. And so when I looked at the demographics and I saw that it was rich in diversity and economics, I thought this is a great place to go. The people who had been born and raised and had taught there forever looked at that change as something that was very negative. And they used words like those people and them, mm-hmm. which I immediately found out was a code word for my students.
Right.
And so that was really difficult, because I had to learn that they didn't want to embrace these kids, and they wanted these kids to be invisible and to disappear. And then I had to deal with all of the issues that the students were coming to the classroom with, their baggage, both emotionally and physically. And so it was a huge role reversal for me. I walked in feeling like I was a teacher, and immediately found out I'm a student. I have to learn how to navigate through these waters that I'm not from, and I'm still learning. That's the amazing thing. I'm still learning, but you know, it was not easy from day one.
Mm-hmm. You're working now in the Freedom Riders Foundation, so you have exposure to teachers all around the country, teaching them some of your methods. Do you think it has gotten better?
You know, that's a great question. I think what was the hardest for me is when you're in the halls of academia and you hear about things like Brown versus Board of Education, where people in Topeka, Kansas literally said, separate is not equal, and we've got to fight this, and we've got to make our schools integrated and equal. And you think philosophically, this is so great, and it's going to roll across the country, and schools are going to be integrated, and there's no more segregation. And unfortunately, those laws and that mentality has not made its way into every school, into every
right.
community. And so it makes me very sad that schools are still segregated, and there's still this mentality of separate, not equal. So what I've been blessed, when the Freedom Riders book first came out, the Freedom Riders Diary, followed by the movie, I've been to 49 of our 50 states. The last state I'm hoping to go this fall will be Mississippi, but I've been to 49 of our 50 states. And I still see the segregation. And I mm-hmm. still see the have and the have-nots. Mm-hmm. And I still see that same mentality that I faced. And yet, I still see the hope and the wonder when dynamic teachers say, I believe in all of my students. And I find those light bulbs still going off with all kids. And so that's it's a battle that I'm willing to fight till my last dying day is for equality, because I think it really is a civil rights issue. So I'm both hopeful and I'm sadly discouraged that it hasn't happened quick enough. But we're creating this incredible grassroots army of teachers who are superheroes, who fight every single day for their kids. And that's the most beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm. You know, you are a naturally creative teacher. Did you ever wonder if it was something that you could teach to other teachers as you began creating the foundation and teaching some of your methods? Or did you always feel... Yeah, go ahead.
Well, it's a little bit about... I always... there's a great scene in The Wizard of Oz when they finally get to Oz, and they pull back the curtain, and there's this gentleman who's not actually a wizard. He just has a bad haircut, and he's pulling some strings. And I always have this feeling, like, I am making this stuff every day. Like, I'm like, one day ahead of them, one lesson plan ahead of them. And some of my lesson plans worked better than I anticipated, and some of them were flops. But I was always fast on my feet and willing to be flexible and change. So I was always learning along with my students. So when we decided to take these lessons and share them, one of the most amazing moments was bringing all of my original Freedom Writers together, and you'll have the honor of talking to Tiffany, who's just incredible, and asking them, okay, this is what I want to do as a teacher. Tell me the effect it had on you as a student, and how can we fine-tune this for other teachers and other students? And that's really been the methodology. When I teach teachers, my cohort is the original Freedom Writers. And so we've worked with teachers all over the globe, but standing beside me is the Freedom Writers. And they demystify all of those issues about abuse, about hunger and poverty and learning disabilities, and why kids choose to be in a gang, and why would a kid flip off their teacher or call them naughty names. And we demystify those issues so that teachers can walk into a classroom and say, I get it, and I understand them. And I'm not going to get caught up in the name-calling. I'm not going to get caught up in all of these issues they're bringing in. I'm going to understand them and make that part of my lesson plan. And that's been the really exciting thing now, is cutting to the chase and allowing teachers to give students a voice much quicker.
Oh, this is so exciting. We're going to take a break here in a minute, and then we're going to come back and continue talking. To our listening audience, please stay with us. We'll be back in a few minutes with Erin Correll.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com. When you look at something that's been designed, whether it's clothing, architecture, or a work of art, do you stop and wonder about the inspiration and thought process that went into the design? Tune in to Dishing the Dirt on Design with hosts Ann Asher and Eleanor Schrader Schappa. We'll take the mystery out of the creation process, along with revealing the backstory from art to fashion to travel and so much more. Listen to Dishing the Dirt on Design every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Michelle Kors 6 Degrees is your connected consciousness. 6 Degrees is what comes around, goes around radio. Committed to delivering a fresh perspective on thought-provoking, investigative information that can change your life. 6 Degrees connects you to the social and emotional scene and is your trusted advisor from finance to romance, mainstream to metaphysical. It's a positive, upbeat look at life, love, and the pursuit of passion. Get connected Saturdays at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Find out what's happening on the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Find out about new shows, featured guests, and what's up this week. Find us on Facebook by searching keyword Voice America.
You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, Ordinary People Doing Extraordinary Deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
Welcome back, and we're here today with Aaron Crewell, who is an educator, a master educator, and the founder of the Freedom Writers Foundation. She was the person that Hilary Swank played in the movie The Freedom Writers, if you had seen the film. And we're talking about the work that she's doing now with teaching teachers around the country some of the skills that she used, some of the skills that she has, and some of the techniques that she used so successfully at Wilson High School. So, you know, as you were talking about the way in which you creatively, really, I was asking you about your creativity and did you think you could teach it? And your answer was really all about being creative. And so it was just a simple, you know, when you think about how that works, of course, the answer would be yes, I use my creativity. And it sounds to me like the way in which you're teaching these other teachers by bringing in the students who you had in that classroom or over the years who were your students to help educate them about what happens in these young people's lives that make them they are. What a brilliant way to do this.
Well, you know, everything that we do is about being inclusive and sharing. And something beautiful happened in room 203. We became a family, and many of these students didn't have a family to return home to. You know, they didn't know their fathers. Either their father was sitting on a door stoop or behind bars or, tragically for many of them, 6 feet under. These beautiful, hardworking moms would have two or three jobs just to try to keep a roof over their head and food on the table. So a lot of these kids were latchkey kids. A lot of them were foster kids. A lot of them were orphans. So my classroom became this environment where we created a family. And I often tease them that we're the most dysfunctional family around. And we know we've got a lot of issues that we've had to bring in our share of counselors and therapists for all of us to really look at some of those wounds and those scars and allow the healing to take place. And allowing writing to be this very cathartic process to say, let's look at these things firsthand. So when we started thinking about teaching teachers, a lot of those issues I understood philosophically, but I hadn't gone through them personally. And so when we bring the teachers together and we bring in the students, it's incredibly emotional. And we have this disclaimer, like, don't wear makeup because you're going to cry it all off. And we pass out Kleenex. And what I love about the students is they'll go to that place and describe their journey. And it's so much about why your nonprofit and our nonprofit are so synergistic. It's about the journey. It is a journey, and it's not just a destination. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of my Freedom Writers have become beautiful wounded healers. They right. took those wounds, they took those scars, and they identify with others. And so when I mentioned that your foundation helped us give a scholarship last year, this is the most beautiful moment. We select a high school senior, and last year, tragically, there was a young boy who was featured in our movie, The Freedom Writers. He was not an actor. He lived in Long Beach, and we gave the opportunity for a lot of kids to try out for the feature film to give back to our community. Tragically, this young boy had lost his grandfather to murder and his father to murder. And he thought, I'm going to be the first in my family to graduate. I'm going to be the first in my family to go to college. I'll be the first in my family to try to do something positive for my community. So he actually was cast in the film as the young boy who was falsely accused of murder.
Oh,
and throughout
yes.
the movie, you see him wearing the orange sweatshirt, and then he's in the murder trial. His name is Armand Jones, a beautiful kid. Tragically, before the film was released, Armand Jones was celebrating with some friends. They just wrapped the shooting. He had bought a new outfit. He'd gone out with his friends to celebrate, and he was accosted and murdered by nine members from his community. And it just rocked all of our worlds. We thought, this is a kid from our city. This is a kid who is bettering his life. This is a kid who's in perpetuity going to be on the big screen, and never even got to actually see the movie.
Oh.
So the scholarship that we gave last year, makes me get very emotional thinking about it, was to his beautiful sister, Aaliyah. And Aaliyah is now the legacy of a fallen brother, a fallen father, and a fallen grandfather. And when we gave the scholarship last year, she came and she said, I need to bring my mama and I need to bring my grandma because they are the strongest women I know. And so your colleagues came and we all stood around and held hands and cried and listened to her tell her story about wanting to live the legacy for her brother and her father and her grandfather, standing beside these women who were so beautiful and so strong. And I think that's really what our story is about, is constantly learning from our past so we don't have to repeat that future. And that's why when you asked if we would talk with you and your community, it's so much deeper and it's so much stronger. And I think that's how I'm always learning, is how do I learn to give people a voice? How do I learn from the past, not to repeat those mistakes in the future? And now that we are forever bonded with your group, I want you to know that this means so much to me. When you talk to Tiffany, Tiffany's that girl who said, I'm going to college and I'm going to graduate. Tiffany's that girl that says, I'm going to stand up for all of those kids who've been homeless. Tiffany's that girl that says, I'm going to stand up for all of those kids who've been abused so it doesn't happen. And if it is happening, I want to give them the avenue and the courage to get help and to make it better. And through us, it was through writing and it was through telling our story. But we want to encourage any of your listeners to go to you, to come to us, and see if there is a way that we can help.
Thank you so much for those really kind words, Erin. You are just such a beautiful soul.
Oh, thank you. And
I do feel like that we're connected in some powerful ways. One of the things that's so true about Bread for the Journey, and actually the name of this show, is called Ordinary People, Extraordinary Deeds. And I find that I meet, you know, in this work, I get to meet, you know, and ordinary to me is like a fabulous word. It's not, some people say, oh no, everybody's extraordinary. Yes, I believe everybody's extraordinary, but we're all just moving through the world doing our little thing, you know. None of us really would look at ourselves and say we were extraordinary. We're just, you know, we get up in the morning, we have breakfast, we go to work, you know, we go to school. We do these things. We have our families and our lives. But when we really get to know these people, when we honor them, when we hold them up, when we allow them to tell their story, when we get behind them and they have a good idea and say, we're going to help you, let's make this happen, then the most extraordinary things happen.
Oh, and I believe that. And I love it. Yeah. I love those words because I do feel like that ordinary teacher who had an extraordinary experience with 150
right.
kids who are so beautiful and brilliant. And maybe I was the first to see something in themselves that they didn't see. But now I just want to hold a mirror and a spotlight to each and every one
right.
of them, because every community has an Aaliyah. Every community has a Tiffany. Every community has those beautiful, brilliant folks who are being overlooked,
right.
who are marginalized and invisible. And I think it's really about having every ordinary person allow those extraordinary members of their community to have that spotlight for a moment.
Right, right. And we try, I mean, at Bread for the Journey, we really can give grants to ordinary people. They don't have to be a bona fide 501c3. So often we find people, you know, like Aaliyah or Tiffany, who have an idea about something they want to create to make the community a better place. And it, you know, it could be one person who has a project that has, you know, a short lifespan, a beginning and an end. There was a woman in Santa Fe I'm reminded of who met with a homeless man because she just made eye contact with him on the street one cold winter morning and said to him, "What? I'm not a wealthy person, but I want to help. What's one thing you need?" And, you know, they looked at each other for a moment and he said, "A warm sleeping bag." And she said, God, I can do that. I can do that. In fact, I can do more than one. Do you know other people who might need them? And he said, yes. And she went immediately to an REI type store, talked to the manager, got a price, came to us in Santa Fe, the board there, and said, here's how much will cost us to buy this many sleeping bags. Would you guys like to join me? We said, yes, gave her the money. She bought the bags, went back to the homeless person. And then he introduced her to his friends who also needed what they needed.
And I love it.
Right. And so at Bread for the Journey, just like you, it's like we get behind people who have a vision and idea, and we get an opportunity to see what happens when we say, I believe in you.
You know, I love the two words you use, bread and journey, because so much of my early teachings was bringing in Holocaust survivors to meet with my students. And the concept of just a mere piece of bread was all they wanted. And so that when we've spent time with survivors, they talk about coveting things that they didn't have. And, and one of the survivors that actually lived in the city that I taught, Long Beach, wrote a book called By Bread Alone. And it was all about all he needed was that little piece of bread to sustain him to the next day and to the next day. And once again, the idea of a journey is something that we're all fighting of not being victims, but being survivors, and that mindset of saying things have happened to us, but how do we survive? And looking at folks like Mel Mermelstein, who survived Auschwitz with his little piece of bread, how can we emulate the strength that he had to become a survivor?
Mm. So beautiful. And we only have another minute or so left. So I want to have you back because I want to talk longer with you, Erin, and we will do that.
And I want to support you. So I'd love to do for your listeners is we have a website that we reach out to educators and community members and students all over the globe. I would love to highlight what you do. So I'd love to offline, get your information, write a beautiful story, and then blast it to anyone and everyone that wants to read about what you do, because I think people need to know. And so there's so many different mediums, whether it's listening to your radio show or reading about you on our website and or our newsletters. I want to be your partner. I am so honored to have been a recipient, to be able to pay it forward to Aaliyah. But I think that what you do is so noble, and whatever we can do to help continue your journey, please count us as partners.
Oh, thank you so much. And I feel very much the same way. And so I want to ask you this question that you can say on air. When you dream about the future for you or for the foundation, what is it you envision? What do you need from us?
Wow. I think it's that every child can find themselves in the classroom and transcend where they are through literature and through books and through learning. And I hope that we can get to the point where every single child finds that place in the classroom. And so as an ordinary teacher, I want to help create extraordinary experiences for every kid. And so We have teachers across the globe, and if you have members who are willing to reach out to those teachers, maybe they can help them find that perfect Aaliyah, that perfect Tiffany, that perfect someone to make a difference.
Oh, that's such a beautiful request. Who could say no? So if we wanted to find you on the web, is it the Freedom Writers Foundation?
The Freedom Writers Foundation? Yes, freedomwritersfoundation.org. We are very accessible. Most of the people who answer our emails are original Freedom Writers, and we read every single email, every single request. And so if anyone wants to reach out, we take it very seriously. So freedomwritersfoundation.org, and you can even address the email to a specific Freedom Writer as well.
Thank you so much. I loved having you on, and I will be calling you after the show, and we'll connect, okay?
Fabulous. Well, I feel like I need to do a drum roll, because I feel like I'm just the MC warm-up act for the star of your show, which is going to be this incredible freedom writer, Tiffany. She is so dynamic, so articulate, so passionate. She has a bachelor's degree, the first in her family to achieve that goal. I think at some point she'll go on to school and get a master's and a PhD. She's so bright, she can't be held down. And so I love to just warm up your audience so now they get to meet the feature of your show, which is this incredible young woman, Tiffany.
You're so sweet. Thank you so much. And to our listeners, we are going to bring Tiffany on right after this break. Please stay with us. Drum roll, please.
Stay connected. Sign up for our newsletter. Go beyond your favorite Voice America shows. Visit iradioblog.com.
Do you find yourself tearing pictures of rooms out of magazines? Do you watch certain movies and TV programs because of the homes they show? Are Sundays reserved for open houses? Then you are a home dreamer. And someday, you will build or renovate your dream home. Steve Klipp has spent 3 decades learning how to win at the dream home game. His show, Winning the Dream Home Race, can be heard every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Let Steve Klipp help save you money and make you a winner.
Adoption changes a family forever. For the adopters as well as the adoptees, there are many adjustments that need to be made, from lifestyle to financial. And the personal rewards are unlimited. Listen every week for Your Adoption Coach with Kelly Ellison. We will examine in detail such topics as international and domestic adoption. We will talk with adoption professionals and hear stories about real families adopting. If you've been thinking about adoption or recently began the process, you'll want to tune in to be inspired every Saturday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, Ordinary People Doing Extraordinary Deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
Welcome back, and I'm so glad that you're here and listening to the show today. It's one of my most exciting shows. I've been interviewing Erin Gouwell of the Freedom Writers Foundation. She's a creative and extraordinary educator, and the feature person in the film, The Freedom Writers, Hilary Swank played her character. And so for the second half of this hour, we have with us one of the original Freedom Writers, who was portrayed in the film as well. Her name is Tiffany Jacobs. And Tiffany, I am so happy to have you on the show. Welcome.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm glad to be speaking to you. And hello to everyone out there.
That's great. Well, you did get a great introduction a few minutes ago from
I was blushing a little bit.
And it's not surprising at all considering who she is and what we got to see, you know, in the film. And I talking to her, I could really see that they portrayed her very well in the film. She seems very much like that warm-hearted, encouraging
Yes, all her idiosyncrasies, they show, like when she says, "What's the dealio?" and we all laugh. It was, everything was just so on point. She studied her character down to the T, and it was just hilarious to watch it be replayed by someone else. So I loved it.
That's great. So why don't you, Tiffany, by way of introduction, tell us a little bit about, maybe at the beginning, tell us a little bit about your life, if you're willing to, before you entered Mrs. G's class, as you called her when you were a student.
Well, before I entered Ms. G's class, I grew up in Louisiana, and my earliest memories are really of extreme domestic violence. My father was an alcoholic, and every morning we woke up, they got in an argument for some reason or another, and, you know, I'd have to see this huge man hit someone who's half his size, and that's how I woke up every morning. He made a promise to us that he wouldn't hit us anymore when he got a job in California. And so, you know, we sent him money all the time just so he can stay on his feet. And when it was time for his family to follow him, we packed everything we owned, and we actually got on a Greyhound bus, my mom and her four kids, and we saw, you know, all of the landscape, and it was just such an exciting time. However, when we pulled into California, we got to Union Station, and it was like I was in a foreign country. Outside, right outside, is what they call Skid Row, and I had never seen, you know, people living in cardboard boxes and having shopping carts with everything they own in them, you know, and I had never seen that before. Unbeknownst to us, my father did not have a job. Unfortunately, he had become addicted to drugs, and he was even more of an alcoholic, and he was living in a homeless shelter. So that was my introduction to California. So I don't know why my mom didn't get back right on that Greyhound and go right back to Louisiana, but, you know, she loved that man, and she decided to make it work. So from then on, we lived in hotels and motels until finally we couldn't afford anything, and we actually had to sleep on the street one night. And, you know, I remember it like it was yesterday. We were using every quarter we had to call every family member back in Louisiana, and everyone said no. They were tired of sending us money for hotels and motels. And, you know, when you have nowhere else to go, you sleep like a homeless person, you know. So. Right. We walked and walked for, seemed like hours until we found the cleanest spot we could. And we put all our clothes on the ground and laid a blanket over them, and we all slept six in a row. And when I tell you it's the most uncomfortable sleep I've ever had, and sleeping under the stars just didn't describe what I had to sleep through. I mean, I didn't know if I would wake up and one of my sisters and brothers would be gone, or somebody could have just shot us all. And, you know, I just didn't want to go to sleep.
So, incredibly frightening. Oh, my God.
Exactly. And after that, what else are we, how do you make money as people who are homeless? You do what everybody else is doing. So my father decided to get a cardboard box and cut it in half and get a Sharpie and write "homeless for work for food" on the board. And him and my mom would go and stay on the busiest corners in L.A. and just see if society was generous enough to give them a few dollars to feed their family. And unfortunately, they did this for quite a while until I entered high school. Even when I started high school, my mom still said, "I'm going out," was her word for it. And you knew what that meant. She'd take her sign with her. But through all this, we got to school every day, and, you know, lucky for us, we had lunch tickets, so at least we ate once a day for sure. So by the time I was in Aaron Gruel's class, I was there in about the 10th grade, and I was shy and reclusive, and, you know, I kind of dressed like a boy, and I didn't want to be noticed at all. You know, I didn't have the cleanest clothes, and, you know, my shoes were from Payless or worse yet, a church that donated, you know, the clothes. So I never wanted to be recognized or had focus on me.
Or to stand out, right. Were you
exactly.
a student? Were you, I mean, some people really enjoy learning. For other people, school is really a very difficult process. Mm-hmm. How would you portray yourself as a learner?
I was a good student. One thing my dad brought us out here for is to get a better education. So he was very focused on us getting good grades, and we'd be in trouble if we didn't. So I definitely had to make good grades, and school was a safe haven as well. I wasn't in an environment where people are yelling and screaming and throwing things. And,
right.
you know, I could do my homework after school because the lights are on at school, and mm-hmm. I could eat and, you know, things like that. So it was everything that my home wasn't. So I loved school, and I always got good grades. I spend most of my time, even on the weekends, at the library, just holed up in a corner reading books all day. So I definitely liked
right.
school. I was one of the ones who knew the answers. I just was shy, so I didn't, you know, raise my hand. But that was one of the first things Aaron helped me with, was getting out of that tentativeness and just being vocal and speaking up and learning that I do have a voice and I could use it proudly.
What were some of the ways that she was able to do that with you? Do you remember?
Being as open as she is, like eliminating the student-teacher relationship and have it be more of a mentor relationship. Mm. And that allowed us to speak freely, and it allowed us to just be free. In the classroom, she had, during lunchtime, it was the best times because we would have all our friends in the class, and it was just this huge hangout spot, and we could listen to the radio, and our chalkboard became a coloring book, and we had people singing all the time, and that's where we really got to break down our barriers and learn to get to know each other just as kids. It was the first time I was ever allowed to make friends. You know, I was always told that my friends are my brothers and sisters, and I don't need any other people in my life, so it was really weird to get to know, you know, other kids and the things that they do and talk about, and so it really opened my mind to a whole different way to be. You know, I didn't realize that I could be free in my environment and not be scared that someone would tell me to shut up and sit down. So
right, such a beautiful thing, you know. And I'm thinking as you're telling this story, you know, I was watching the film. I've watched it many times now. I love this film so much. And how, you know, that tension in the end about not knowing whether or not she was going to be able to be your teacher in junior and senior year because she wasn't allowed to teach in the upper two classes yet.
Right.
And then, you know, the end of the film where you get to, you know, spoiler alert to anybody who's listening if you haven't seen it. Sorry. And to hear you now and to talk to Aaron and discover that many of you are still together and you're working now together to make life easier for students in other classrooms all around the country. It's a very powerful story.
Oh, yes. I just actually came back last week from North Carolina. I was speaking to Pfeiffer University, and I had three presentations, and all of them, everybody was just so welcoming, and I appreciated them allowing me to tell my story and really get deep. You know, it's really emotional, and it's hard to tell my story because I like to put everything in a vault and leave the past in the past, but hearing all these teachers every year saying, oh my God, I have a kid just like you, and you've made a difference just by having someone hear a story, it's become my mission to tell it as hard as it is. I can let somebody else know that they can get out of a horrible situation if they just free their mental cage and allow themselves to fly, and that anything is possible. With our intense Holocaust education back in high school, I realized that humans are so resilient, and we can bounce back, and we can get through anything with a strong mind and positive focus, you know, and we can get through any adversity if you have the right atmosphere and the right people in your life.
I'm going to stop you for just a moment because, and I want to hear that story. We need to take a break. And so our listeners, please stay with us. We're talking to Tiffany Jacobs, one of the original Freedom Writers. And we'll be back in just a minute and hear the rest of the story.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
Tune into Around the World in a Glass, presented by Sportsman's. We're a show all about wine, spirits, and other beverages. Your host, Kimber Stonehouse, is a professional expert and wine enthusiast. Each week, we'll focus on a different region of the world, discuss wines and other beverages, talk about some of the top restaurants in the region, and what to pair with which wine. Just listening could make you almost an expert. Around the World in a Glass is heard live every Wednesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Conservation starts with us. Learn about environmental concerns each week when you tune in to Our Wild World with host Ellie Weiss. Our show centers on Africa each week and what's being done to save our wildlife, ecology, and ourselves. However, we'll also discuss what's going on closer to home. And most importantly, we'll let you know what can be done in our own backyards by featuring guest experts and featuring your questions and answers. Listen every Monday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, Ordinary People Doing Extraordinary Deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
Welcome back. I'm glad you stayed with us. We're here talking to Tiffany Jacobs, one of the original Freedom Writers. So, Tiffany, you were about to tell us a story.
I was just going to mention that I was reading on an airplane a quote by Alicia Keys, and she said, you know, comes a point in your life when you have to realize what kind of person you want to be. And once you decide on that type of person, you can clearly see who fits and who doesn't fit into your world. And so you need to keep with you those who nourish you and protect you and makes you feel safe and strong and smart. And if anything in your life doesn't make you feel that way, you have to change it. And that's kind of something that I end with when I speak to kids, because it's just so true, and it's so easy to change it. You know, so many times I would ask my mom, why aren't we leaving? Why aren't we leaving? And her only response is that I love him, and it just didn't make any sense to me, because he wasn't nurturing us. He wasn't keeping us strong and good, and he was just making our world horrible. So I now recognize the signs of abuse. I recognize when I don't want people in my circle. And Ms. Gurrell used to always say, you know, if you hang out with 10 losers, you're probably going to be that 11th loser, and vice versa. So that struck a chord in me, and I made it a point to hang out with people that I thought were winners, you know. And I made vows to myself that I was going to graduate high school and I was going to graduate college. I would never let anyone verbally abuse me, physically abuse me. And it just takes looking in the mirror and saying it to yourself until you actually believe it. And when it's time to make a change, it's time to make a change. You know, you get tired of being sick and tired, and that's what allowed my mom to finally leave him. But through it all, I thought she could have left numerous times, you know, knowing the type of person she was married to. So.
Right. The abuse carried on far too long. You have a relationship with her today still?
I do, actually, with both my parents. They've learned from my experience being a freedom writer, and my father has gone to counseling. He's actually gone back to school. He's going to be an alcohol and drug counselor. He goes around and he speaks to the elderly in convalescent homes, those who can't make it to church. He'll read the Bible to them. So he's completely made a change. And him and my mom are divorced. My mom is now the supervisor at the Aquarium of the Pacific here in Long Beach. She has a beautiful house and a man that loves her. And so she's recognized change was necessary as well.
I'm sure that you're a living example of something that helped strengthen her, and so the effect of Aaron's work is so far reaching. You just think about
exactly.
It. It's kind of phenomenal.
If you keep focused on positivity and doing positive things, you know, it's got to rub off at some point.
Right, right. And to have that kind of kindness and bestowed upon you
and
after
patience.
A while. Right, that's exactly right. And patience. You become that yourself. That becomes the thing you model. That becomes the thing you want to be in. So I'm sure that Aaron influenced you and that you also influenced your mother.
Yes, I definitely believe that too. I mean, she went to school, back to school as well. And for at one point, she was making better grades than me. I said, hold up. That happened. So we had kind of a competition after a while. It's like, no, I gotta get some straight A's too in college. So we definitely have a better, much better relationship these days. We just actually celebrated my nephew's birthday, and it was the first time we had all gotten together, including my father, and had a meal. So it was definitely weird, but it was calm. There was no arguing. I said, if I hear one argue, I'm going to walk home. But it wasn't. Everybody was nice, and everybody was, you know, happy that all the nieces and nephews were there, and it was a beautiful thing. I was happy, and I think we could do it every year now.
Oh,
you know, for a long time, I didn't allow him in our life just because, but it takes a lot to forgive someone. And having seen him not on drugs, you see him as a sober person, and he's a whole different spirit, you know. And I wish I had this guy when I was growing up, but at least
right.
I have him now, you know.
Right. So one of the things Erin said when she was introducing you is that aside from being the first person in your family to go to college, she imagined that you would go back one day and get your master's and maybe even your PhD. And I wondered if that was in your sights.
I would want a business, an MBA. I would probably want to do that. When I was in college in Cal State Long Beach, my mom and my sister, we started a little business. It was a clothing store called Hey Baby Jeans. You know, you look in the mirror and say, hey baby, I look kind of good. Well, we named it Hey Baby Jeans, and it was just so fun. I had so much fun, like, getting it started off the ground, writing a business plan. When I was doing my marketing minor, I loved learning about something and then actually applying it to the business. After the economy, you know, went down, so did our business. But that just that experience and just being vibrant, I would love to go back and really learn how to run a business from start to finish and be able to make it successful. So that is something I would be interested in the future.
Oh, that's very exciting. And mm-hmm. There have been so many experiences you've been through, I think some hardships. And I'm wondering if you can name what you think was the most rewarding experience for you on this journey.
The most rewarding experience, I would say, would be meeting the Holocaust survivors that I've met, like Renee mm-hmm. Firestone. She was one of the first ones we met. There was a time when we had entire conferences, and we had 30 Holocaust survivors just to ourselves, and we got to trace their tattoos with our hands and got to give them hugs and share pain. And that's when I really realized that you can survive after tragedy, that these people were displaced and tortured and starved. And that's exactly how I felt at the time. I felt like I was going through my own undeclared war, and they went through an actual real war and came out and had beautiful families and great careers. So that really was the biggest push for me to make a change in myself, and I will always remember the stories that they told, and always remember their advice to never ever give up, even in the toughest times. You can overcome adversity, and that's what I was going through. So to have that in my mind, that I was pushing through, you know, waking up every day, washing my clothes out with the same soap I used to wash myself with, it was just, you know, I have a goal. I'm going to get out of it. And that was the biggest, most rewarding thing I could do for myself, is to let myself know that I don't have to live like how I grew up, and I can take care of myself. And I have been in an apartment, you know, on my own for years and never once got an eviction notice. So I'm definitely proud of myself.
Oh, I'm so proud of you myself. And that's a beautiful answer. It sounds like what happened is that you developed not just hope by meeting them, but some skills too, like never give up, like this adage that became very real. It wasn't just a bunch of words.
Exactly.
Because
we saw the real life people, and that's one thing she did. She wanted to connect the lessons she taught with our life, whether it was, you know, learning alliteration with the lyrics from our favorite artist, music artist, or bringing in a poet when we were learning poetry, or bringing in a Holocaust survivor when we were learning about the Holocaust. She definitely wanted to make it a real-life thing, because we were going through so much that was real, and we couldn't really focus on something frivolous that you were teaching. It just wouldn't stick, and we wouldn't care. You had to make it deep enough so that it was worse off than what we were going through, so that we could care, kind of thing.
Right. That's exactly. And that was the way to make you care. What a brilliant idea.
Exactly.
Well, we're at the end of our show, Tiffany, and I just want to thank you so much for being on here with us today.
You're welcome. You know, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And I hope that I'm just here in Northern California, and I hope that one day soon I'll be in Southern California and I'll get a chance to meet you in person.
Oh, that would be amazing. I would love that.
Yeah, you're one of my heroes now.
Thank you. It sounds weird to hear. Like, Meet Geese was my hero. Like, that was one of the first people we met. She walked through snow to dig up turnips, you know, but for someone she was hiding, and I was just so brave. But thank you so much. I've been hearing that, but it still doesn't feel real, and I just feel like I'm just, you know, doing the footwork and letting people know how to survive. So thank you.
You're welcome. How to survive and to thrive.
I like that.
That's right. And to our listening audience, you have been listening to Bread for the Journey Radio on our show, Ordinary People, Extraordinary Deeds. And we got to have an exciting and wonderful show today with the Freedom Writers Foundation. And if you'd like to support them in any way, you can go to their website, freedomwritersfoundation.org.
Correct.
And I thank you. And I am Mariana Cacciatore, Executive Director of Bread for the Journey, and you can find us on the web at breadforthejourney.org. And so I end this show, as I do all shows, with this. May all beings be happy. May all beings be safe. May all beings be free.
We hope our program inspired you this week. Please join Mariana Cacciatore for another edition of Bread for the Journey next Saturday at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.